Okay, so while we wait for Juan to join the Adobe Connect room, I'll just run through the agenda I had for today. This is mainly based on the items I think we worked well on last time, and also taking into account the discussions on the task force call we had on Saturday morning for Cheryl. So the first item discussed, this was the point raised by Alan regarding the privacy of documents. Second one is the one raised by me, and I don't think we talked about it enough, was the privacy of discussion, so regarding mainly regional advice. The third one was, and I think this is fairly urgent, is the summary of issues that we've raised to be sent to the ALAC. So we've put together quite a few issues between us all. And I think Alan had a point on the task force call saying that, you know, the ALAC members need to be aware of these. They need to be addressed directly. So I put a few together. I'm sure there are more or better ways of talking about them. So I'll need you two to advise me with that. Last point, the application form. I think we're doing well on sorting out gaps and maybe contradictions that we've currently got in the application form. Ideally, I think I'd just like us to put to paper the question of how to guarantee the awareness of the applicant organization as a whole that this application is going on. This has been raised in terms of trustworthy information. You know, do we have, for instance, a leadership member involved in the application, and secondly, linked directly to our aim of increasing engagement during the application process, meaning that the organization ideally needs to know what's going on and needs to be recipient of the news of the accreditation and equally of the engagement information we talked about providing during the application. So those will be my 4 points today. Is any glaring issue that we should be treating today, according to you? Do you all agree to the agenda? Please let me know.
Natalie, Cheryl here. I'm happy with the agenda, and I do think, if you can remind me, I want to pick up on an aspect of engagement and put in a little bit of historical context, because I think we're making an improvement, and I'm not sure everyone will understand why that's important, so I want to share it here so it's on the record. We'll get to that later.
All right, perfect. We'll add that on point number four about engagement in the application form. Perfect. Okay, thank you. Juan, is that all right with you?
Okay. It's okay.
All right, perfect. Thank you for adding me, Juan. I'll just send you the AC room now. I've just seen your Skype message. There we go. All right, so first item was privacy of documents. I had little struggle with this one, simply because when I got handled the ALS procedure, I got given the procedure for handling ALS application. So it was revision 2 on November 2014, so a fairly recent form. There is very little mention on any document dealing with ALS applications. There's very little regarding the actual document, so whether it be the application form, content and circulation, and due diligence form, content and circulation. There is a lot about expectations. There is repeated information about minimum criteria, which is of course all very well, but regarding our discussions now, we don't have necessarily 4 or 5 documents to back us up, unless of course I've gone right past it and missed it entirely. But what we have for the moment in privacy of documents, as you well know, is that application forms are public. They're circulated on the mailing list. They're posted on the ICANN at Large website. So there's no real issue there. Hence why some information that was on the due diligence form and didn't appear on the application form seemed not to make sense, but that was equally for sensitivity reasons that some information is best kept to the due diligence. Which takes me to the due diligence document, which is common knowledge, welcome Juan to the Adobe Connect team. Common knowledge is that due diligence is supposedly private, and that's what I was told. So then what my first contact with the due diligence privacy was in the procedure for handling ALS applications, the document that gets given to the staff member responsible for handling applications. And the exact sentence is, and this is in the email that staff sends to RALO leadership for reasonable advice, so the email containing the due diligence, the sentence in there is, and I'll quote, "We would like to remind you that the due diligence form could contain sensitive information. Please read the form carefully before sending it off to third parties." So, nothing in there saying do not send this form, but making the recipient aware that some item could be sensitive and would need to remain confidential. It's hardly a clear guideline. It can be, and this is, you know, the message from staff to RALO leadership. Next, in the at-large framework formation and the updated version, the information, I quote again, "The information resulting from the due diligence conducted will then be provided to the then current members of the RALO in the geographic region that the applicant organization is based in. Therefore," and I interpret it this way, "that the due diligence can be circulated to the internal RALO mailing list. The due diligence cannot, in my opinion, be posted on the RALO wiki space, which is open to all." Go ahead.
I think you've interpreted that very accurately. I actually don't understand why the due diligence itself would even need to be posted to the RALO list. I was always of the opinion, and back in my day, she says, you know, taking the old lady approach here, it was the result of the due diligence, not the due diligence forms themselves, that was transmitted to the RALO. So it was more of a report than it was the documentation. So somewhere in my following chairs on from me and different staff doing things, a different way of transmitting that DD information has come into play, and I do think that needs to be discussed in some considerable detail, because it was staff. That's why DD was always a staff responsibility, because there was a greater degree of trust and control, including anything that may be considered of a private or commercial and confidence nature, with leaving that in the hands of staff. So, yeah, just a bit on some of that.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And that leads me to my next point. That's the backing paperwork on this subject, and then you have the actual practice. And knowing how that the RALOs deal with it in very different ways is one thing. Actually sitting down and seeing how different these this is another thing. Linked directly to this, before we go on to the practice, is again the documentary backup of the regional advice itself, as the two are linked. From the ALAC Rules of Procedure, adjunct document 4, the long quote here, "Upon completion of due diligence, all the then current members of the aforementioned RALO will have an opportunity to review the application and related documentation and may then comment in confidence about the applicant in such a way that the anonymity of the source person or entity of the comments may be kept confidential if the source of the comment so wishes. The substance of the comments will be available to the members of the RALO, the ICANN staff, and the ALAC members. So we have two things here. We have the fact that the RALO will have an opportunity to review the application and related documentation. Related documentation can be input from the Internet Society, a copy of the bylaws. It doesn't say, due diligence presented or report of due diligence. We don't have that specified there. And my other point about the actual, that leads me to the discussions that take place in the RALOs, is the anonymity of the source person. Now,
Chatham House some RALOs, the intention.
Exactly. Mm. Now, some RALOs do offer that option. Other RALOs, who, for example, encourage discussion exclusively on a wiki discussion page, are not necessarily... They're not prohibiting anonymity, but they're not offering an alternative solution for that person to comment on it. And that might need to be something that needs to be insisted upon. So we have a mix there of not necessarily contradictory advice, but unclear advice.
It's untidy. Yeah. It's untidy. Mm-hmm. It really is. Because you can see from the reading of the ALAC rules of procedure on that, yeah, we were talking about the Chatham House rule being applied to this process, and it very much does not say, and the gory details of DD will be shared. So this does need a serious tidy up, I think. Part of it has been, different people doing the jobs. On this, going all the way back to Mathieu Matos, they've just sort of done it the best way they can based on what the current belief system is, and then it's kind of got codified. So the ALAC rules are clearly codified, but I think some of the operational procedures within staff have been developed out of practice rather than codified and accredited by the ALAC. You know what I mean? There's a difference there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely clear. That's definitely clear from the documents. And it's not necessarily, it's not an indication of one way suits better than others. I think it's an indication of, well, the guidelines have been vague, so we just did, coming from the railroad, so we just went ahead with what we thought was a quick interpretation of the guidelines. So none of them are completely incorrect. They're just misguided. For instance, I'm sure you're aware of this, but when the Afualo leadership receives the due diligence, so that's mostly amongst the leadership, they discuss the application. They then present the application and their opinion on the monthly Afualo call. They then decide together by show of hands or comments in the chat if the advice is positive. If it is, then they relay that immediately to staff. If there are questions raised during the call, the leadership work with staff on them and then represent them at the next Afualo call or if the deadline is coming up on the mailing list. And others keep this very leadership-based. Afualo, for instance, Afualo leadership tend to discuss the application amongst the leadership on the mailing list.
Objections.
Yes.
If there's any objection. So we work on an objection base. And if someone had an objection, then that would be confidentially transmitted to the leadership and or staff.
Exactly, which is the same principle as URLO. So they base it on positive regional advice by default if no opposition is heard.
Correct.
Exactly. LaQualo posted... Go ahead, Phil.
No, I was going to say, I was going to ask you about La Crallo.
La Crallo post, make the list aware of the new application and post a wiki discussion page URL to the mailing list. So there's a section from the La Crallo homepage called ALS discussion pages. So there are a few ALS application discussion pages already there. So in the supporting documentation, you'll have the application form, the bylaws. You also have the due diligence posted on the wiki page. And then members are encouraged to comment on the application. So they're often a lot of members commenting there. So that means that clearly these comments are public. And also, since I've taken on the ALSs, there have been a few La Crallo applications that have been a source of debate and source of rejection after this debate. So these discussions are still visible on the wiki pages.
And if I may, that's part of what originally I argued against happening, because it is up to the ALAC, of course, to accept or reject the RALO recommendation or lack thereof. And it is perfectly possible, and indeed has happened, where the ALAC has rejected the RALO advice. And so you then get a situation where you've got a newly accredited at-large structure coming into what is basically a very uncomfortable cesspool of publicly available information in some regions, where if that was to happen in AP RALO or URALO, I would argue, because of it being a by objection and confidentially managed process, no one would be the wiser, and that integration of that at-large structure would be far more easy to do. That doesn't mean that, you know, objectors may not be, you know, concerned and watch closely that outcomes are positive, not negative, in terms of those people's contributions. And we have had situations where at-large structures in Asia Pacific have been put up, not recently, in the past, for purely political reasons. For a short while, if mainland China had won, then the disputed territories had to have two, and then mainland China would have to have two. And we had this bizarre... It was true. It was happening. It was just cute to watch. Now, that could have been disastrous if it wasn't managed the way we manage things. And it concerns me that now... what we've got with those at-large structures that were born out of that political turmoil, perfectly active and very reasonable inputs from there. For example, you know, we have even the youth movement that we see happening in both IGF and ICANN meetings. So, I mean, we wouldn't have that if those things hadn't sort of been put into place back in the dim distant past. Now, if that had happened in an angst-ridden and insulting environment, remembering how in Asia Pacific we feel about face and about reputation, it would be very, very different and we'd be fractured by now. So I just think we've got an opportunity to try and make this happen better across all the regions.
No, I agree. And just as a last point, and then I'd like your and Juan's opinion about how we can address the railers about this delicately and sensitively. For instance, Neuralo hasn't had that many ALSs recently, but taking from the last one I took after the a change in after the interim chair for a while was in place. What happened there was it took place only on the mailing list, so no wiki page. So the secretariat in place posts information about the applicant on the list, so no due diligence published, just quite a long email about the applicant, so giving the background of why the organization approached ICANN or was approached for a Neuralo outreach effort. asks for comments from members, provides a clear deadline, provides many reminders, and equally was the only one to offer opportunities for members to comment off list. And that was said very clearly. So I think that was a quite complete and useful, you know, one-time communication with a few reminders.
Absolutely fits the purpose, but we also mm-hmm. have very little cultural diversity there.
Exactly.
What you've got there is, you know, whether or not we need yet another at-large structure coming out of Washington State or Toronto. I mean, it's almost a question of, you know, in some cases, like what happened in the Internet Society chapters, some countries have chosen to have a single chapter per country. Others have, you know, multiple chapters per region or province, and in some cases, multiple chapters per city. And that, of course, can lead to capture in a numbers game. So you would, as a RALO, want to be a little bit concerned if, as happened in Berlin in the early days before we had regional at-large structures, and most of these are inactive at-large structures, but there was something, if memory serves correctly, like 7 or 10 different at-large structures out of a single city, which mm-hmm. certainly did bias, you know, URALO's beginnings, and that's something that you need to be aware of, if not avoid. And I don't have a problem if you avoid it or not, but you do need an awareness of it. So the way URALO went along with that is perfectly in keeping, in my view, with the intent of how things were originally put together.
Yeah, this is Natalie again. Very true. I think I think that the last thing we want to do here is to go, well, look, this is a perfect model of a, you know, of regional advice collecting. Please follow. I think, and I'm looking through the application that's processed. You know, the way the regional advice was led has an impact. It has an impact simply not only in terms of just having objective feedback on the application, but also in terms of, you know, as you've been saying, you know, early engagement of community members knowing more about this application. And it's all very well sending a URL to the community and say, well, you look it up. You know, but a proper introduction of the organization with a little background info, you know, already is a stepping stone, and I think that's also one not to be missed. So my point here would be that I do believe railroads need to be approached, railroad leadership needs to be approached about this. I was wondering if, you know, given the way we're sending off communications to the ALAC with our summary of issues, if we couldn't at the same time compile a list of, you know, rudimentary guidelines of how best an efficient and community engaging way of collecting regional advice. Yeah, more of a happy hint document rather than anything enforceable, because I don't see how we would enforce it. But something in those terms. What do you think?
Juan?
Juan, are you still connected? Hang on, Adigo hasn't told me.
Okay. I like that approach, and I think there is need for some harmonisation, and we do need to make a best of breed out of this, and I think this is an opportunity to do so. And there are just simple practicalities that I think even those regions that are handling it in a more public way, if we also need to recognise, I'm sorry, that's not a full sentence, but forgive me, I think this is going to be work that is looked at and recommendations made about during the ALAC review process as well. So I'm not overly concerned about how much it gets finalised in a short period of time, as I am how much good, effective, codifying, intelligent work is being done on it before we get into the ALAC review, and even if it continues through the ALAC review, because I can guarantee that the ALAC review will be making comments on it, and it'd be nice to be ahead of the game rather than playing catch-up.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Juan had, in fact, dropped. As Igor just dialed out him again. Juan, I don't know at what moment you dropped. What we were proposing was to send a document to railroad leadership about guidelines and recommendations on how to best collect input from members regarding regional advice. We're thinking about the best way to approach railroad leadership. Did you have any ideas about this or comments to make?
Okay, Natalie, I mean, again, I think it's better for us in LACROAL to send that to LACROAL leaderships because they can spread to other RALO. It's okay?
Sorry. You prefer us to address railroad leadership first, LACROAL leadership first, who will then tell the membership. I'm sorry, your voice broke. I couldn't hear.
Yeah, it's cutting my audio. I don't know why.
But I can.
I can make it happen. To make it to reach the
yes, please. That would be great because I'm getting half of it, and I don't want to miss the rest.
Natalie.
There's a line and a computer. Yeah, no, there isn't. There was. Hold on. Let me check the Vizigo before we carry on.
I think there's an opportunity in the time we have allocated for us to start raising awareness of, if we needed to do something, I think we should pick two or three points, and this needs to be one of them, that we raise with the regional leadership in the Dublin meeting and sort of prepare the groundwork for, and what we propose is that a suggestions best of breed document go out to you all for you to discuss, think about and probably work with between now and our next review point of this process as we move towards harmonisation. That type of approach. But I think we probably need to talk it through at Dublin, because it's very easy for particular regions to only think that the way they do things is the right and best way to do it. And until, for example, you hear about Europe's concerns about privacy, for example, you don't recognise that. So in Asia Pacific, privacy is almost an anathema. You know, I mean, what is privacy? We don't even have it at all in some countries, where it's hugely important in Europe. So things like having even the email addresses of the key contacts in the at-large structure application
Europe would argue that they should be obliterated in the public record, which I think all regions need to think about. So that we need to talk a couple of these things through. Thanks.
Agreed. And yes, so that's it. I do like your point about. I mean, we have so many elements that I was going through the notes. I think there is the more we speak, the more we see what can be done. And we, you know, for Dublin, we need to start organizing them in themes, and presenting the ones which we see more long term, which will need more discussion. We need to anticipate them in Dublin and raise them there. I think that's absolutely right. Definitely. Juan, can you try again, please? Can you hear? Okay, so Juan says in the chat, for Cheryl, who's not in there, he said that Juan could make the regional leaders work with us. Yes, that would be fantastic. We will need, I think, the more information and the more the more support they get in reorganizing the way they deal with regional advice is crucial. And we, you know, remembering that we also need to get the railway leaders involved with us from the application moment onwards too. As we've been talking about the pre-engagement steps, that there will be a staff side that will be feeding information from our e-learning platforms, but equally that's, you know, as we've seen with the post-accreditation engagement, staff could only do so much without intruding in railway affairs. So it would be crucial to have the regional leaderships alerted to this. Yes, definitely.
And Cheryl, if I may, that also brings us back to some of what we were talking about at the work group meeting, at the task force meeting, about that early engagement, you know, the offering opportunity for perhaps some peer support from, you know, an ALS or member buddy system, all sorts of opportunities which will get that even pre-accreditation interaction started and make the whole process go. And I'll come back to that point in agenda item 4.
Okay, brilliant. Because I will start for Friday's meeting. I do believe we will have a meeting scheduled on Friday. I'll try to.
Are you sure? Because Alan and I and a whole lot of us will be in Los Angeles doing CCWG.
True.
On Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, so we've limited availability for task force call then, I believe. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I could in Friday too. I can't Friday.
Okay, well that's done then. I'm sure I'll get Gisela to send out a Google for the next one. But for the next task force call then, what I will do is try to have a draft document with the guidelines and backup documentation and arguments laid out, so we can put that forward to them with your agreement. I'll try to send it to you to before the call. Let me write that as an action item for me.
That'd be great.
Okay, perfect. Right, my next point was the summary of issues to the ALAC, and apologies for the background noise, I've closed the windows. So just to remind you, Alan asked us to sooner rather than later have a list of the summary, of a list of the issues we've raised with the accreditation process up to now. So, I mean, it's pretty much what we've said, but I tried to condense it. So I'll just go through it for you and see if there's anything that's redundant or just unreliable, which is always possible. So hold on, let me find the slide. All right, here. So what we going in chronological order of application, we raised that there was an inequality in terms of quality of application information received. So the inequality regarding the sizes or affiliation of the organizations. For instance, small independent organizations versus chapters, for instance. From a staff perspective, and I do insist on that, the regional VPs are very uneven in their input and in their involvement in the due diligence. So that is something that that staff need to reach out on. That we only have the email exchanges with the applicants if their website is in need of revamping, for instance, compared to an organization with a fully blown updated website and the backup information from the mothership, and that's they're playing on completely different footings. Issues with the application form, that we realize the need to ask the right questions. So by right questions, we mean as much for the applicant as for the railers and what the railers need to know about the application. And regarding the last point of this information received was the unreliability regarding who in the organization filled in the application form. Are we talking about a member of the leadership, or are we talking about an administrative employee, which links directly to the issue of the whole organization being aware of the application. So that's the first block in terms of inequality of application information received. The next one is regarding what we've talked about today, which I will fill in better. So it's the privacy of documents and discussion. So regarding first due diligence and linked to that the regional advice. And third point is the community discussion times. So first, regarding the feedback staff receives from RALO members, that's very badly worded. What I'm trying to say is that once staff forwards the application to the regional list, depending on the railroads, the members will immediately provide comments or information about what they know about the organization, and other railroads will not. Now, this doesn't mean that staff relies on this information. It just proves that certain communities will be more engaged in an ALS accreditation rather than others. Regarding the review for regional advice, as we've just seen, there's a discrepancy of member involvement depending on railway leadership. We also had the issue of the ALAC members not having the time to discuss during the voting period. And further to that, a link to that, is needing the role of the ALAC members to be clarified. We raised during the task force meeting last time that some ALAC members took the role of decision upon themselves and worked through the documents and through the regional advice. Others trusted the regional advice and just went along with it. So that was the last item of the community discussion times. And the next one is the last one, so realizing that the application procedure period doesn't provide engagement opportunities. And this is a new point which we're going to need to work on. So that is a draft of the issue that we've raised up to now. Now, is there anything that's completely useless here? Is there anything enormous that I've missed? What do you think? And just for information, Alan has joined us in the Adobe connection.
And on the bridge.
Welcome, Alan.
Natalie, I'm not on the bridge because I don't have the internet anymore. My husband broke it over the weekend. Long story.
It's overrated.
tell you what, I'm missing it. I think that's a good starting point to pass on to our discussion, Natalie. I think some of it. If we almost put it in a table form, and where we've got some even the beginnings of some proposals that we could have in sort of a column two or an edge column or whatever. Because, for example, with our discussions on earlier engagement, that needs to be raised. You know what I mean? That the DTA has already sort of had a little bit of thinking about some of this. One of the points that needs to be made, I suppose, is that the variability of who in a prospective at-large structure is filling out the form doesn't mean that it can't be filled out by an admin officer, but it may mean that our form says, can you confirm that your leadership has been engaged or reviewed this application and is supportive of it, yes or no? And then the second question could be, you know, can you confirm that your wider membership has, et cetera, et cetera? You know, so there's a bunch of ways that some of those things sort of can link together, and that we can do a little bit of proactive and earlier engagement work as well, means that with the question on membership, then we could have a link to, and here is, three very short online learning 101 activities, or a 5-minute video piece explaining to your organisation what an at-large structure's role in ICANN is. And we could have, you know, a couple of chairs, Alan and Olivier, you know, doing a talking head piece. So there's a bunch of stuff we can bolt on to all of that, is what I'm saying. Thanks.
Thank you, that, Cyril. Now that's good. I do like the two follow-up questions there regarding leadership and wider membership. They do have their place in the application form, definitely. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. This design team has a difficult problem because you're trying to design something, part of which is going to be driven by other groups. So certainly what we have to do now is identify the gaps in what we have been asking or how it has been answered that we know are there. There's going to be other things coming, going ahead. So if we have a requirement that the leadership know about it, that clearly leads to a question. Part of what we're doing is going to be driven by other things, but the other aspect of what we're doing, what we need to be doing, is not just the application, the application process, but the process that follows the receipt of the application. And I know in private discussions with you, Natalie, there's a number of things, like the ability to put an application on hold for a reasonable amount of time, which stops the clock ticking, that is not currently in our process today at all, and yet it shows up time and time again in the process of how we're going through the acceptance procedures. So I think we're doing well. I think in some ways this group is going to have to do a flurry of work at the end to integrate anything that comes out of the other groups. But on the other hand, I think we're probably a step ahead of the game because either externally or among us, we've already identified an awful lot of the issues that we know are problematic. So,
thank you, Alan. Juan, do you have anything to add to what Cheryl or Alan said, or anything regarding the summary of issues to the AOAC? And if you're speaking, Juan, we cannot hear you. You can maybe type in the chat. Okay, Juan Adigo tells me you're still connected, so if you'd like to make a comment, please don't hesitate in typing the chat.
So this brings me to the last agenda point, which was regarding the application form, and I think that Cheryl has touched on that right now. Let me just get to the slide. So just for Cheryl, this slide was the one that we started filling in regarding the our ideas for the application form. Added to that, the question was, and this was raised in the task force call too, was, you know, how to guarantee that the organization will know of the application and how will we guarantee that they will get involved. So Cheryl raised the possibility of having the two questions added to the application form regarding leadership awareness and the wider membership awareness. I know that it was raised during the task force call to have out of the three contact people we would now have on the application form, to have a compulsory applicant leadership member on there. What do we think about that? Do we think that's going too far? Do we think it's a good idea given that we're asking for three names anyway? What are your thoughts?
Cheryl here. I think it's desirable, but it can't be made mandatory. You know what I mean? Some small organisations, some associations as such, may have such a rapid turnover of leadership. You know, they could have annual elections, for example. It may be that a role needs to be associated with it rather than an individual. So I think we need to have a strong indicator that this is desirable, and maybe even lead them to the point that says so. If your leadership and executive change regularly, you may find it better to appoint a role to this connection rather than an individual. That type of stuff. I think we can be smart about it, is what I'm saying. Back to Mute.
Thank you, Cheryl. Alan, go ahead.
I would object to it, actually. The last thing you want to do is say someone in a particular role has to be the contact, someone who may have very little interest or may be very busy on other things, and this is the least of their priorities. So I would strongly oppose that, I think.
Alan, Cheryl, back at you on that. As I started to say, This having someone from leadership is a desirable, not a mandatory, and that should it be an issue that they're concerned that there would be rapid turnover, then they choose. But you put it back in the hands of the ALS.
Yeah, certainly, but I wouldn't say it's only rapid turnover. You could have president for life who is the wrong person. I agree with that. I think if we word it carefully, we can say you may want to consider, but... So.
Okay, this is Natalie here. I mean, this is a problem that we've, as staff, we've seen with the contacts. We saw it for the Atlas II preparation. So, regardless of the whatever role the person has within the organization, keeping coherent and reliable information is almost a part-time job in itself, and getting our database up to date for Atlas II was a two-staff person job. It was at least a couple of hours a day. Regardless of the effort on staff, it also means that when Railo leadership need the contact databases, we cannot provide it immediately, and we're slowing Railo work down. So this is far from ideal. In terms of keeping the organization engaged, once the accreditation is through, we traditionally subscribe the contact persons to the ALEC announce list and to the internal regional mailing list. What if we were to subscribe the organization mailing list to ALEC announce? Would that be completely undesirable, or would it be a good idea to provide information to the organization if the contact people are necessarily filling that role?
Natalie, Cheryl here. I think that should be an opt-in, but I think it's a good idea to offer.
or maybe an opt-out rather than an opt-in. But I think there should be an ability to choose, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Alan, go ahead.
She said what I was going to say, except I would make it an opt-in, not an opt-out. The last thing you want to do is start sending what is going to be perceived as spam to potentially 1,000 people.
And in some of Asia Pacific, many thousands of people.
Well,
so, and it would be seen as spam, but that's where an opt-in or not. Or we can also have an ability, a link that says your individual members are welcome to subscribe. Follow this link.
I think we want to make it as easy as possible for people to disseminate information. And if putting their whole mailing list on is something they think is a good idea, dandy. And that saves them the keystrokes of having to forward it every time they see something. On the other hand, if our mails are in a language their membership doesn't understand, and they barely understood the opt-out requirement, and therefore we started sending it by default, that would be a bad thing, too. So I think we can offer all sorts of possibilities to make life easier. I'm not sure that's a membership application issue, but once you become a member, a whole bunch of things unfold, and that probably fits at that point.
No, of course, I agree with you. It's not necessarily part of the whole membership application. However, in terms of the accreditation procedure from the staff perspective, we have certain steps we fill in, and I am. Yeah, that may be more of a discussion for myself with staff, but there are certain steps that are currently being done that maybe take a lot of time, and I am not certain are fruitful. So, and especially the subscribing to mailing lists, as you've mentioned before, we're touching one person rather than an organization, and I keep thinking there's a much better way of doing that. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I really think it's the requirement which we are likely to put in writing this time, which we said last time, but I don't think it ever made it into any rules, is that you are required to make ICANN information available to your membership, probably in a push technology, which means mail, but it might not be the only technology that is the appropriate one, given how whatever the group is works. So I think we need an application time, the acknowledgement that they're willing to fulfill that requirement if they are certified. But we can fill in the details of how to do that at the later time. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. A lot of the points we're raising appear on the application form, but they appear as a very easy and obvious yes tick. Without requiring further work on them, so I do think that we need to work on the questions and work on the examples required to hammer in the message a little bit, because they appear currently at the end of the application form when they've already filled in everything. Do you agree to this? Yes. Are you happy with this? Of course. I'll sign and send. And we need to make it obvious that it's an obligation.
Yeah, I agree.
We could also make it easier. I know it seems, perhaps a little fanciful, but we could have an app for this, or at least little blocks of code that say embed this on your website, and click here will get you the ICANN feed. There's a bunch of ways to skin this cat, but we certainly need to.
Yeah, Natalie, if I may, I think what we're really talking about here is we need a welcome kit. And that may well include a tutorial. It may include documentation. It may include a telephone call or a Skype call or something to actually say, great, you've been certified. Now let's get you in shape so that you're going to be a productive member of our community. So it probably is going to take some more staff time to welcome each ALS and do it properly than we may be spending today.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it will be a productive use of time and will make up for lost time afterwards. I mean, if we can convince people to change their contact information when the person changes, you don't have to chase them at the time when we suddenly have travel coming up or something.
Exactly. No, I'm very sorry. Sorry, go ahead, Phyllis.
Yeah, I'll give you a personal vignette. I just got a new passport. I have global entry into the U.S., which means I put my fingerprints down and I walk through going into the U.S. It's really nice. If I don't change my passport on the form that goes along with global entry, I'm going to be stopped. It happened to me once. It gives me great incentive to actually go into the system and change my passport number. So there's a reward for me in doing it properly. We need to figure out what the rewards are here for other people doing things properly.
I agree, and I'm very, very happy to hear that. The information is that we have the information, and it's becoming, it's still not easy. It's becoming a bit less difficult to find, and especially with the at-large website, we've been talking with Ariel a lot, that the issue is not necessarily the content of the information, even though that has been an issue. It's also the navigation and, to work out what a newcomer, navigation is and what they need to find the information quickly. But that's not enough, because we've done webinars. We do webinars a lot. We do the Skype helpline. Some people join, some people don't. The times where I've struggled to get information via email, I've had to pick up the phone, and that has replaced hours of email exchanges, just one phone call. It shouldn't be a revelation, but it recently was.
There's nothing wrong with a phone call. That's a very fine, fair, and reasonable thing.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that we do need, if we could at one moment, I don't know if this is this isn't maybe a job for this drafting team, but there is definitely in the staff procedure, and there are many, many moves which I think are useless, and I think if there was a phone call, and then a welcome phone call, it doesn't need to be a webinar. Not everything needs to be webinar-based. We can do it without an Adobe Connect room. We can have, a two or three-person phone call and go through it like that. I think that would humanize it a lot. There's nothing less human than a PowerPoint presentation. Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
Heavens, Natalie, you want to humanize things? Gee, where do you come from? No, seriously.
It'll never work. It'll never work.
We are wedded to the technologies that we start with. I cannot tell you how many times I have these disjoint, out-of-sync Skype text chats with people where each of us are one line ahead of the previous guy's answer who's typing it at the time. They get out of sync. It can take a half an hour to arrive at something. If we would actually get on either Skype or telephone and talk, it would probably be 45 seconds. But we seem to be wedded to some of these technologies. So I support what you're saying. We need to decide what do we need to accomplish and then what's a good way of doing it. And it may be different for different parts of the world where language is also an issue or connectivity is an issue.
Agreed. We're 1 minute past the hour. Cheryl, Juan, I know that Juan's lost connectivity for a while. Cheryl, do you have anything to add?
What I wanted to add was going back to the early engagement, the pre-accreditation engagement, both in a proactive bringing up to speed and information sharing point of view, but also directly with the RALOs to ensure that people are individual or at-large structure representatives are given the opportunity, mentored, buddied, peer-supported, whatever it takes, to get engaged even before accreditation with what's going on with the region. I think that will help a lot. And it is important from a historical context Now, Natalie, I hope that you, as the one who's running this show from a staff perspective, and are aware of and indeed have read the 2008 Ombudsman's report on the complaint from a prospective at-large structure against the ALAC, which caused all of these procedures to come into play. But I'm a little fearful that it probably wasn't part of the kit you were given. And the basic problem that caused all of this back in the dim, dark, distant days was an unconscionable length of time without communication from the ALAC while it was deliberating with a prospective at-large structures accreditation. And that's the synthesis of it, right? That's it at its very core. A whole lot of other bad stuff happened and it just went from bad to worse. But if we are doing proactive and early engagement, that becomes a non-issue. We then should be able to have the luxury of the suspensions that Alan referred to earlier. But at the moment, we have some issues with suspending. We actually have to do a particular type of halt to the processing of an at-large structures accreditation, because it was an ombudsman's guideline and a board agreement that we had only so much time to deal with these things. And that was basically caused through lack of interaction. So if we get good interaction early on, none of that is maintained as an issue. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Nella. I've heard of this complaint. I've never got around to reading it, so thank you for that. I will. I'll definitely go and look that up. It is true that where 75% of the time it is possible to finish within the 3 months, mainly because the length of time given to the ALAC vote and the length of time given to regional advice. That's often unrequired. However, it is true that the initial due diligence and initial contact with the ALSs can take a certain amount of time, and those do tend to go over. So a bit of background on that is extremely helpful. Thank you. All right, so I've got a couple of action items down for me, mostly. I trust that we will wait until the next task force call to meet up again within the drafting team. That will give me time to send to you the draft regional advice guidelines that we'd like to show the task force and see what their feedback is on that. And any other ideas you may have, please don't wait till the next drafting team meeting. Please send them via email so we can start working on them together. And with that, if there is no other comments, thank you very much all. This has been a really interesting meeting, and talk to you all very soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Natalie. Thanks, everyone. Bye, Juan. Bye, Alan.